You're listening to A Little of This and Some of That, a podcast about food, friendship, and family. I am Dom.
And I'm Carl.
And we are here today. I'm very excited about this show. This is one we've been looking forward to doing since you and I first started planning this out. This was an idea that I had and I wanted to run with. And what we are doing today is, because my partner here, Carl, is kind of down with a cold. Just a little bit, but that's okay because I have somebody here we're going to be talking to today. We're going to have the conversation going. We're going to have a lot of fun with it. We are having our first guest on with us today. I'm going to give a little bit of an introduction here, then I'm going to throw it over to her. Our guest today is a Philadelphia radio and television personality, published author of Gravy Wars, South Philly Food, Feuds, and Attitudes. She is founder and co-host of Cucina Chatter radio program and website, a corporate trainer, program speaker to both professional and college students, in my opinion, the goodwill ambassador to Delaware County, and a person who I regard as not only a mentor, but a good personal friend of mine, Miss Lorraine Rinaldi. Aww. Welcome to our little humble abode here.
And you know what? There's nothing more to say. Thank you so much.
I think we covered everything there. Thanks
right.
for coming in.
It's all a wrap.
So it's been a while since we've gotten together.
I know. You were on my show last.
I was on your show. Yeah. I'm returning the favor here.
So appreciate it.
Oh, please. I cannot tell you how happy I am to have you on here. And we're going to get into all of that.
I understand. But, you know, you did say off air that this was Carl's idea to gently encourage you to do this, but I like to take credit for any future success you have in broadcasting.
I'll make note of that.
Yes, check is in the mail.
We'll just write checks to Lorraine Rinaldi.
Yeah, we're going to touch base on all of that stuff, how we met, why I'm here, why I brought you here. A lot of base to cover. So let's get started. A lot of bases to cover. So let's get started with how our paths had first crossed. I'm going to take us back to, I guess, the heyday of the Facebook boom, mm-hmm. which is where that all started. Social media. And my wife says to me, she's making friends with everybody and anybody, clicking and liking and all that stuff. And she says to me, do you know this lady, Lorraine Rinaldi? And I went, the woman on the radio, right? She goes, yeah, I guess that's her. But she has a book out called Gravy Wars. And, you know, she's talking all about it here. And I just sent her a message to let her know that you're starting your new food blog, which is, 5.5 years ago at this point. And it was when my food blog was just starting to take off. And you and I had connected via Facebook. Mm-hmm. You sent me an early copy of your book, which I have right in front of me here. Mm-hmm. And from there, I started, I don't want to use the word stalking, but following you to all of your book signings and I was a groupie. I was a Gravy Wars groupie.
I was a little nervous, Carl, but when I met him and I said, you know what, I could take him. It's cool. Now he brought food, so
brought
it was all
food.
Good.
Yes, that was the piece.
I'm kidding, guys. I'm not a tough guy. God, to forget. It's theater of the mind. They're going to imagine
exactly,
me with huge biceps and whatnot.
So that's what happened. I started checking out your little public appearances here and there, mm-hmm. to see what was going on, and from there we developed a friendship. Mm-hmm. You brought me on board for your Cucina Chatter radio program. Mm-hmm. I've done some freelance work for you. Little fun Photoshop projects. We're going to talk about all this stuff.
Oh, yeah.
Today.
Dom's an awesome graphic artist.
You've given me the opportunity to spread my wings every possible way that I could, which was
nice?
A lot of fun.
So, thank you.
Oh, please. We're going to start off with...
And you introduced me to a lot of people, too. A lot
we
of
did.
Foodies.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
West Coast.
That's right. We brought in Tiffany, Una Mama Italiano, will be on here at some point, I'm sure.
And Emma.
Emma, that's right. Emma
Caparelli. Gluten-free, yeah.
Exactly, yeah. When gluten-free wasn't the trendy, hip-to-do thing.
Exactly.
That's right.
Emma had done it out of necessity for her husband.
She did.
And I didn't know about this whole... It was, like you said, right on the edge of that gluten thing.
Right.
And I say gluten thing because nobody knew. You know, celiac was just kind of coming into, this discovery of this kind of disease that people had. And you said, I met this woman online. I want you to talk to her. She has her own blog and recipes, and they're gluten-free. And I had to look that up. What does that mean?
She was a South Philly native which is how we had gotten in touch. And it was more about the celiac disease at that point than the gluten-free. And now you go to supermarkets, and they have aisles that feature gluten-free this and websites. And I think there might be a little bit of a confusion there as to why people are doing it. You know, is it for a healthy trend?
Yeah.
Or which, from what I've read and what I've studied about it, it's more about a health necessity.
Sure.
Mm-hmm. So, but Emma would contribute a lot of recipes to my blog, and she does a lot of stuff with animal shelters. She's busy with that at the moment, but some fantastic recipes she gave to me. And yeah, that was one of our many connections. A lot of, you know.
So the common denominator is always the food.
Food, absolutely. Right?
It's all about the food.
It's all about the food. And you mentioned a lot of food. We're going to go right to your book. I want to talk. I have a lot of questions about the book. I've read the book a number of times. I use it as a reference for recipes.
Really?
Oh, absolutely.
You? I'm impressed. Yeah. I mean, your recipes far surpass my,
What's good is good. You can't deny what's good is good. So
I want to jump in real quick. Last weekend, my wife and I went through and we're purging. It's because it's spring in my mind. Mm-hmm. I know it's only February, but it's spring and I'm purging everything, spring cleaning. And we were throwing out books and DVDs and all kinds of stuff and boxes, all this boxes and stuff. And then I was like, hey, where's that book, Gravy Wars? And she's like, oh, dear God. And we looked, and sure enough, it was on the shelf. It was one of the few books that survived.
Didn't make it to the recycling bin.
No,
I got nervous.
It made
there.
The cut.
Wow.
It made the cut.
Well, you know, Carl, I got to ask, with all the food and the common denominator and whatnot, I mean, Dom's in great shape, too. He's real thin, but you look like you could use a meal or two. So what's up? What's up with that? I got to tell people this. I'm sorry. It's metabolism.
Genetics. It's metabolism and a 5.5-year-old boy. That's what it is.
You know what? It's just I don't eat. You're going to freak, but I don't eat lots of pasta. I don't eat lots of carbs.
That's all right. Well, that's smart.
And I just stay, you know, active. I have a standing desk. And
oh, really? You
know, yeah.
I could use a few lessons from you. All right.
So let's talk a little bit about the book. And we know that it's Gravy Wars, South Philly Foods, Feuds, and Attitudes. For the listeners out there that don't know what that means, and if you don't know what it means, shame on you, because you should all be aware of this book. You should all be aware of what gravy versus sauce is.
Thank you.
I know what it's about, but what encouraged you to approach this, to write a book about it?
I mean, okay, so here's the story. Yeah. Mm-hmm. I had done a lot of ghostwriting. My background is not professional chef, but broadcasting, communications. I had done, as I said, some ghostwriting, and I always wanted to write a book that was my own. And I said, what am I going to write about? And I tell people all the time, when you're preparing a speech, a paper, whatever it is, you have to write or speak about that which you're either an authority or very passionate about. And the answer to that was radio. If I wrote that book, I would never be on the air again in Philadelphia or maybe anywhere, because I'd be blacklisted. So I said, I can't write that book. And I always joke about that. At this point, it's all passe. But I don't have any deep, dark secrets in the business, but it's changing business. I said, I don't have it in me to write about that, even though I love that and that's my passion. And it was Christmas Eve 2005, and I can't believe it's 10 years ago now.
Right.
And I was getting agita, which, for those who don't understand, it's aggravation, little chest pain, nothing to be, the typical stuff in an Italian household, because I took over Christmas Eve dinner. I'd long taken it over. But you know how it is. When you have guests over, it doesn't matter how big or how small your house is, where do they all congregate? Answer, that was not a rhetorical question. Mm-hmm. That was a real question.
Kitchen. Right, in the kitchen, yeah, absolutely.
Okay,
yeah.
So, right? Yeah. Well, when you're in Lorraine's house and she's in the kitchen, where's the last place Lorraine wants you?
In the probably kitchen. In the kitchen.
Exactly. That's why the wooden spoon's always by the right hand. Get out of my way. Right? So I was getting anxious. And I had to laugh at myself. I had to stop and laugh. Here's everybody coming in a good mood who's throwing their handbag on the kitchen counter model, and that makes me sick.
That's a big rule in my house.
Yeah.
Get the kitchen, anything that you can carry around off the countertop, off the table.
Right? Put it where it belongs. And yes. And my kids were instructed, when people come in, you greet them at the door, you take their coat, you hang it up, you get it out of the way. Tell Nana, tell everybody else, put their handbags in the closet. They're so darn polite.
Right.
Bring them in, get them a drink, lead them to the dining room, the living room. No, they just walk right past the kids and the hugs and the kisses. And it's nice.
Sure.
But I was getting aggravated because it was Christmas Eve. So you're frying fish last minute, right? Mm-hmm. On the stove. And who wants to help and who's tripping over you and this and that. And at one point, I was getting so aggravated, it was visible. And I said, okay, this is ridiculous. This is supposed to be enjoyable. Everybody's jovial. And here I am getting agita. And I laughed at myself. I said, this is absolutely hysterical. This is so stupid. I'm being such a kid. I had this quick conversation. I said, you know what? This is my next book. And all the ideas just kind of like a flood into my head. I'm thinking of how I, first of all, can I say the word bastardized our Christmas Eve tradition, because the seven fish was three or five, as long as it was an odd number, because it's superstitious not to be an odd number. Don't ask me why. I had steak. I had chicken. You name it. Stromboli with all kinds of lunch meats.
I believe hot dogs were on the menu, too.
There were pigs in a blanket. Yes, there are.
1974.
Wow. You guys study the book.
We don't mess around here.
So, that's funny.
Yeah.
Carl's like a fat guy. You could just see that. Just he probably has all these stats on me. I'm a little
scared.
That's
why I keep him on hand. There's my walking reference. Yes.
But so right then and there, I said, there's the book. And the crux of it was that, you know, first of all, we think that we are so darn Italian. And we purport to be so, you know, traditional and very Italian. But we're not. No, we're hopelessly American, my family anyhow. And I didn't come out and say it like that in the book, but that's what this is, self-deprecating humor, this whole book. That was the intention. Because all our lives growing up, you know, it's who makes it the best. And then my brother marries Eileen, who just by the first name alone, you know, is not Italian.
Sure. Yeah.
We teach her how to cook, and she's loving it because she's like, just making points left and right with my mother. And I could say this because I tease her all the time, but they were young when they met. She's been in the family over 30 years now. And my mom's teaching her how to cook, and my sister and I are like, gag, you know. And now my brother ever since would, you know, you guys are pretty good to me and my sister, but Izzy's is the best. I'm thinking of all this. I'm like, this is kind of hysterical. He knows how to torque us. We take the bait. We go with it. We all get aggravated.
Game,
you know?
On. Yeah.
Yeah, game's always on, right? My mom, always a backhanded compliment. Lorraine, your scallopini's good, but, you know, you should put mushrooms in it. Ma, I don't eat mushrooms.
Exactly,
That kind of, there's always, it's really good, but, you know, but never good enough for the parents,
exactly.
Right?
Exactly. And they never let you know what the true secret is to it, to make it.
You know, I don't even think, some people are like that, but I got to be honest, in my house, it's not like that. It's just, they won't even admit it if it is good.
Right.
It's more of the pride thing, which is really sad.
Okay.
Yeah.
I get you on that.
That's the tradition I grew up with, if you will. That's the, I don't know, pathology, whatever you want to call it. But so all that was flooding through my head Christmas Eve, and I said, this is the book I have to write.
Yeah.
And it started as a recipe book because I was still thinking, we do everything. Mm-hmm. We do it all. You know, we're so Italian. Not until I started putting it on paper. First of all, nothing was written down. It took longer to gather the recipes than it did to write the anecdotes.
Sure.
So,
that's where our show, a little of this and some of that, that's part of the play on words where it comes from.
You know, that's, some of that. I get it. Because that's exactly what you do.
Yep.
And so I have this huge kind of comical disclaimer in the beginning of the book that nobody tried to intentionally withhold, even though that's the running assumption with women, is that nobody will ever give you their true recipe.
Right.
And it may be true for some. As far as I know, my aunts, my mom, my sister, everybody gave me their real recipes, but there's some mistakes. I had one nasty letter. I made Diane's gravy and it's too much salt. I ruined
a
whole.
You got called out on it.
Called
huh?
out. And oh, I look back in the book and I'm like, I called her up. I said, do you really use a teaspoon of salt, a tablespoon of salt? She said, I don't know about that. I said, are you sure? And she said, well, I don't know, Lorraine. And the book's been out 3 years now, Diana. Somebody just gave me a ratch of, you know what? And I'm like, well, the disclaimer's in there.
Yeah.
Well, nothing's measured, whatnot. So, yeah, then after I started getting involved, started writing the book and putting down the recipes, I started talking to chefs. I started talking to real off-the-boat Italians.
Yeah.
And I was never so humbled in my life when I realized how hopelessly American I am. Medigan. So I, the book took a total 180, and instead of a recipe book, it became a book about the Italian-American culture.
Sure.
With some family recipes.
Yeah.
So there's 70 recipes, but it's not your typical recipe book.
No, but what I love about it is that when you talk about a recipe, you don't just have one version. You have three, four, five versions
of it.
And
they're all slightly different.
Just a little bit different.
Yeah.
And that's what I love about this book. Aside from the recipes, you talked about self-deprecation.
Yeah.
Everything that I read in here is like describing my childhood, pretty much.
Yeah.
You know, all of the fun stories, family pictures and everything that you had in here. Maloiks, all the words you throw out there. And it's just like, you know, I almost felt like if you didn't grow up in Delaware County, it's like, oh, we you know, I could have just, she could have been my sister, you know? And like, okay, I know that your family has South Philly origins. Your grandparents came here. Your parents lived here.
Sure.
You moved out. You were raised South Philly Italian.
That's
I love that phrase.
Yeah.
And I'm thinking, how much more can this, you know, connection be? And then I look further back in the book and I see a picture of Aunt Mary, mm-hmm. Uncle Pat,
mm-hmm.
lived on Sydenham Street,
yeah.
the same street that I grew up on in South Philly.
Oh, I forgot about
you know?
That.
And there's only like three blocks of Sydenham
Street. I could
have
seen
it's
you.
It's not like you probably, I may have run over your foot with my big wheel. Who
yeah,
knows?
You might have. Yeah.
So the tie-ins here were just fantastic. I not blowing any smoke here. For those that grew up South Philly Italian, we're going to use that word because you didn't have to be in South Philly to grow up that in that fashion. I find that this book is of cultural importance and significance because
I appreciate that.
It really does tie everything together, and it kind of makes fun of the things that goes on, which is what your intentions were.
Well, you know, specific as it is to the area, it's mm-hmm. very generic as well. Let me throw this out. So you didn't have to grow up South Philly Italian. You could have grown up East Boston Italian. Same dynamics. You could have grown up, you know, Bronx Italian, same kind of dynamics from what I'm told from people that read it.
Right.
Now, a dear friend of mine, Rhonda, who you know from the show as well, grew up in Northeast Philadelphia, Jewish neighborhood, Jewish family. Mm-hmm. She put the book down and said, oh my God, this is my family.
You find similarities.
She said, you take the matzo ball, the meatballs out, put matzo balls in, same dynamics.
Right.
We used to be, and your father used to make you, I don't know if I put this in the book, but I know she and I talked about it. My parents were so anal, still are, so OCD. We took a shower. We had to dry the tile. We had to get a clean towel and dry the tile. God forbid the towel we use on ourselves wasn't used more than once, but the towel that you dry the tile
make sure
with,
that tile is
yeah,
clean.
Right?
Yeah.
And Rhonda said, my father had a squeegee in there. We had a squeegee the tile. Yeah. I'm like, really? It wasn't just my sick Italian? She said, no, he was nuts about that. Like little things like that.
Yeah.
I had a Spanish friend, same thing. She said, you know, this is pretty much our culture as well. So it's just, you know, where the specific superstition or the tradition might be slightly different, the concept is the same.
Right. Yeah. Similar to your recipes. It's the same basic dish. Some of the ingredients might change a little bit, but it all comes out to the same big family dish.
And we'll fight about it.
Yeah, we do. Yeah.
Oh, my gosh. You know, like
nothing's ever smooth.
My friend Deanna, whose gravy recipe is in there now, her family is, I believe, Calabrese. We're Abruzzese. Mm-hmm. And her parents grew up in West Philadelphia, where mine are from South Philadelphia. And I said, oh, that's why you put onions in your gravy, because we don't do that.
Right.
That ain't right. So it must be the different province in Italy and the different neighborhood in Philly.
Oh, yeah. It all.
I don't know.
They all link up. Now, you mentioned about how it doesn't, of course, it doesn't just centralize in South Philadelphia.
No.
It's all over the place.
Right.
You kind of toured with the book, I guess,
a little bit.
You know, I know you
down
mentioned
to Florida,
you,
went up
Florida,
to Boston,
yeah, Boston.
Was out in San Diego.
What was the reaction of the people? Did they see this as sort of like a superstitious book, gravy, not sauce? And I'll kind of clear that up in a second why.
Yeah,
but what kind of reaction were you getting from people that maybe weren't familiar with the terminology?
Well, the people who weren't familiar, as soon as they saw the tomato, they said, oh, you're talking about spaghetti sauce. Italians knew right away, wherever they were from.
Right.
And they either said, oh, yeah, I call it gravy too, or you're so wrong. That is just a Philly thing. You know, it's not just a Philly thing, too, which I thought it was until I started getting out and speaking to people. East Boston, I mentioned that, the Bronx. There are certain sections of Little Italy in Chicago that I've never gotten to. I don't know the names of the neighborhoods, but they call it gravy as well. But by and large, most Italians, of course, in Italy, would never call it gravy.
Gravy, right. Oh,
and you know my theory there, where the name came from. Do you know my theory?
I do know.
I think it's a mistranslation.
Yes.
You know, in certain provinces in Italy, Raoul is gravy, which is R-A-G-U, ragu.
Okay, yeah.
But in some, it can be sauce. So I believe that when the Southern Italians came over at the turn of the last century and they were trying to assimilate and learn the language, Ralu maybe is what they used, and somebody translated it for them and said, oh, that's gravy, you know, in the proper Italian. Right, Ralu is right. Gravy. So it became gravy.
Yeah.
That's what I think. Now you'll have chefs say, well, if it's cooked with meat, you know, then it's gravy.
And it's
that's
a gravy. And then the big argument comes up, is it gravy? Is it a meat sauce? Is it this or that? My answer to that, and I always get asked, you know, and yeah. My opinion at this point is call it whatever you want to call right. It, as long as it tastes
exactly
good.
Exactly, same.
Officially, my opinion on it is that, you know, you start off with your sauce, tomatoes, basil, olive oil, garlic. Mm-hmm. When you add your meat, it could be a meat sauce. If you're letting the meat cook for 3, 4, 5 hours, you're letting those flavors marry. The fat is coming out of the meat. Mm-hmm. That's a gravy. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. That's my answer. That's what I'm sticking to.
Well, Chef Jackie, Chef Jackie would say if you put meatballs in there, it's not necessarily gravy. But if you right. put a bone in there, it's okay. The marrow of the bone that makes it gravy.
Okay. Yeah.
She's a chef, so I don't know. Yeah. But what's interesting, too, is that, you know, and I have to clear this up, that's mm-hmm. not all that the book is about. The
no,
real
no.
war is who makes it the best, not
exactly,
what we call it.
Right. So. you also mentioned about Chicago. St. Louis has a big Italian section.
For real? I did not know that.
They have a little, I don't know if it's a official Little Italy. A lot of Italians are there. And I was watching a show not long ago, one of these PBS cooking shows, nothing on one of the bigger networks. And they were mentioning gravy. Couple of Italian guys there, family restaurant, and they were saying, we make this. This is our Sunday gravy. And the host of the show goes, oh, that's the stuff with the spaghetti and the meatballs and everything. So it is.
Really?
It is
all
out
right,
there.
St. Louis, here I come.
Go.
Because
Rock
I
on.
Still have about 10,000 books I need to get out of the garage. 6 years later, I'm still pushing this one-trick pony.
St. Louis people, sign up. We got yes. You'll learn a lot.
But I'll tell you what, a preacher's never appreciated in his own congregation. And sometimes when I've done local events.
That's what I wanted to ask you.
Next. Oh, I'm sorry. I'm
No, please.
Well, I've had people at local Italian festivals, South Jersey and Pennsylvania.
Because it is a pride thing.
It's a pride thing. And I've had more than one occasion somebody walked by, I don't need your book. I do that.
Right.
Someone said to me once, I could have written that. I'm like, well, did you?
There you go.
Could you buy it? No. But because this is what it's about. Your silly pride. Your, you know, and my silly pride, my family's silly pride.
Yeah. One of the
funny.
One of the early meetings that you and I had, you were signing books at,
I guess it was the library.
That was the first time we met. Library
yes.
was great. You did a little
yeah.
reading from there.
Yeah.
I think this was at Borders.
Borders.
Maybe.
You came up to Borders. Yes.
I came up to Borders just to see what was going on, because not only was I intrigued by what you were doing, you know, writing a book. I've been in publication for years as on the design end of it.
Mm-hmm.
But I wanted to see what the other side was. And you can tell us a little bit about what you learned book publishing
sure.
at that point. But when I was there and you were working the room, it wasn't just a signing. You had the microphone and you're talking to people. And I think you even had a birthday cake at one of your shows.
Oh, you were there too.
You did stalk, didn't you?
I had a birthday. I had a book signing on my birthday. So one of my sponsors, Licio's, they made a beautiful sheet cake and they put the cover of the book on
it.
You know,
I remember
instead
that.
Of picture, you know, how they do the picture cakes.
It was
gorgeous.
It was beautiful. It's good cake too.
It was.
But when I was at this Border signing, and I just wanted to go see what was happening and what the whole process was about.
Mm-hmm.
And you're working the room and you're talking to people, and these two older women walk by me. And keep in mind, for those that don't know where we're recording from, we're 15, 20 minutes outside of Philadelphia,
mm-hmm.
not that far away.
Mm-hmm.
And these two older women are walking by, and one of them sees you doing your thing, and I hear her say, what's going on over there? What's she doing? And the other lady looks over, Gravy Wars. Oh, it's that book about that spaghetti stuff.
And
I was like,
oh, no.
Wow. And I told her, I said, no, it's gravy.
That's fun. Did they come over and get cake?
I don't know if this was the birthday one, but you may have had something else, and I'm sure that they worked in, you know, grabbing whatever swag they could. What did you learn about the book process? Because it's something that's always been in the back of my mind,
mm-hmm.
and Carl and I have had this discussion a number of times, and this is why I'm doing what I'm doing now. I just, watching you, knowing what I know from my end of magazine and book publication, it's not an easy job. There's a lot involved. What did you learn? Is it what you thought it was going to be?
Well, it wasn't my first foray into publishing, so
okay.
I knew what
to
expect, but I still went into it with starry eyes.
Okay.
I will tell you this, if anybody listening wants to know how to put all your effort and passion into something you love and never make a dime, I'm queen of it. So just talk to me. It's happened with radio career, happened with book publishing, but you know what? You can't go into anything,
right?
Unfortunately, because you think it's going to be your $1 million venture.
Sure.
We all do, and let's be honest, you know, we all think this is the brass ring. I'm going to grab it. This is going to be my ticket. But unless you have your feet firmly on the ground and understand what you're getting into, and I tell people who want to publish this all the time, because people think, I've had people write me, people I've grown up with, you know, they think I can write a check for $1 million because they've heard me on the radio. And I thought, oh, if you only knew what I did and how few people make the big bucks, very few, you would probably laugh at me just, you know, why did you do it? You know, because that's what I loved.
Yeah,
you got to love what you're doing,
right? Your passion is very admirable. And I respect that. I mean, I've had my food blog for 5.5 years now. I haven't really made anything monetary on it. But that's not why I'm doing it.
You're making connections. You're having fun.
I'm having a lot of fun. It's a passion and it's an opportunity. It's a practical hobby. What I'm doing, you got to eat.
Yeah,
you
know? Right.
Teaching my kids things. I was making seafood salad last night, and we got the kids these junior chef practice knives.
I saw that on Facebook.
Safety knives, and Ava just jumped right in. I want to cut the seafood. I want to do this, and she made it. And because she did that, she ate it. Now, what 6-year-old would eat seafood salad on their own?
Yeah.
You know,
but because when they have skin in the game, so
her hands were involved on it, and you know, so the passion is there. I encourage people. Just what Lorraine said, it's not, you know, you reach for the stars, but if your passion is there, it comes back. The gratification comes back.
It does. And it's not always monetary. So let me circle back a little bit.
Sure.
Because I make jokes, but. I did this really. I kind of was hoping I'd make money off it. Because of my background in media, because of the marketing idea that I had with this book, I thought for sure I'd get a publisher. I had already self-published. I did not want to self-publish this. And when I say self-published, not Vanity Press, with another project I did, I actually started a publishing company, which is not difficult to do.
Right.
I knew the publishing process. I learned it. Prior to doing Gravy Wars, I understood the pieces of the puzzle, who you had to get involved. So not just the writing, but then you have editors, you have copy editors, you have proofreaders, you have designers, you have book cover designers, you have interior designers. So there's always two designers on it, you know, rare that you'll get one. And maybe
right
you
here,
don't want,
but that's
well,
okay.
No. Rare that, that you may want to use one. It's like,
sure, yeah.
You know, you want to get other input, you know? Mm-hmm. You know, I knew that in early 2000s, website was absolutely a must. When I put Gravy Wars out was when the social media, you know, it was to that was published in 2009 and 2008. People were saying, you have a book coming out. You better get on social media. I'm like, what's this? Facebook? That's my kid's playground.
Exactly.
But I did it. Thank goodness I did.
Sure.
Wow. Because it's a part of your marketing. It's not the end all be all. Never was. But it's part of it. So I knew all that going into it. It's a lot of sweat equity. But you know what? You're doing that stuff anyway.
Right.
So a year after trying to get a publisher, when I wasn't successful, I had an agent who was interested, sent me a contract. And it was very, it was tough. It was, she really, you know, wanted me to sign my life away for a year. And I thought, oh my gosh, I've been itching to put this thing out. The idea started in 2005.
Okay.
The book was probably finished in 2007 because it took me all of 2006 just to get the recipes. My first draft, a friend who's in publishing, but, a specific genre, couldn't do this, said, is this all you got? Come on, Lorraine, I know you better than this.
Wow. Okay.
Do it over. And I said, really? Okay. That's when I said, this is not a recipe book, because I knew then I'd have to make all the recipes, get a food photographer to, you know, then we're talking huge printing costs because cookbooks are full color, glossy.
You want them to look
they're expensive.
Well,
yes, they have to look good.
Yeah.
And food photography is a specialty. So you have to get somebody who's really good.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's not iPhone pictures.
No.
and a lot of the stuff that you see in the picture, you wouldn't eat because they paint it. They put you know, things that aren't food in it to make it look
yes,
right.
Yes, I saw that one time on one of the morning shows. I won't mention which one it was, but they were talking about these burgers and how well they look. Yeah. And one of the reporters decided they were going to pick it up and take a bite because it looked so good.
The producer came out and said, no!
And they didn't stop her in time. And it was like raw meat on the inside because they brushed this thing up with all this brown stuff and glossy, and it looks great. And then, you know, so you're absolutely
food
right.
Food doesn't photograph well unless you really color it up.
Yes.
So I knew all that, and I said, okay, that's one reason. The other reason I was starting to learn is in 06, I quit, you know, I'm a pretty quick learner. I said, we're not the end all in the whole food world, and we're not even, you know, we probably couldn't even compete because I was starting, like I said earlier, to meet chefs and whatnot. So I said, this is more of a storybook anyhow, and my passion in writing is being humorous. I like to relate to the reader, and I wanted to give some. I want to entertain. That's what I want to do.
Yeah, no, it's fantastic.
So 07 was the rewrite and the quest to get a publisher.
Right.
And, you know, but I'm a very impatient person. And so this killed me. And I probably should have waited even a little longer. I probably put it out a little too soon. But when I couldn't get a publisher after 8 months, I said, okay, Folger Ross Publications is going to get this book again.
Okay.
I own Folger
Ross
Publications.
Okay, that's
okay. Which we're changing the name to Pop Books, but not officially yet till the next book comes out, which I know we're probably going to talk about too. But so I changed my whole game around, mm-hmm. and I had sponsors, and that was very helpful. And this type of book, it worked out well. I looked for sponsors whose stories kind of mimicked the story of my family or any typical immigrant family, mm-hmm. which is all of America, right?
Yeah.
So I found sponsors who had an Italian-American either product, interest. Maybe they were Italian-American. Their story was that they came over, they started a business, and it got passed down generations.
Yes.
A couple of the sponsors were younger, mm-hmm. and so while they were first or second generation, they're entrepreneurs themselves. I have a real passion for entrepreneurship. So those sponsors, you know, and of course the other big qualifiers, they had to pony up the money.
Were those sponsors the people that I saw in the book, like Canals?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes, yes. And the way
the write-ups in there. That was
those write-ups were their stories.
Which was fantastic. It was a good addition to it. It gave the real mom and pop feel
and
to
that's,
it.
And that's what I wanted. And also, and you guys know, because you're in marketing, it's one thing to put an ad somewhere. It's another thing to put a story somewhere. That's good PR.
Right.
And that's what I've done all my life. So, in fact, a potential sponsor who never did get in because she didn't want to pony up gave me the idea. She said, why don't you tell their stories? I'm like, duh, yeah, brilliant.
Yeah.
You know, let me relate more to the reader. So, wonderful. Canals Liquor, great story. Chenta, wonderful story. Mm-hmm. Generation to generation. It's, you know,
it develops
Toledo's.
A comfort level.
Yes.
Yeah.
So, you know, it was great because then I went into publication. I went into print, and I already had about 4,000 books sold because of the sponsorship. Mm-hmm. So this is a little inside baseball. If you're going to do this, this is one clever way, I thought, to get a book out. That covered the hard costs. I can't even imagine, and I don't think I ever want to try to do the math on the sweat equity, the amount of time spent,
it's
you
endless.
Know, and of course, my own money too. Websites, designers, everything, you know, I paid up front. I made my money back. Did I get rich off the book? No. Did it open up doors? Absolutely.
Right.
Am I done? No way. No way. I'm still looking for the brass ring, just like everybody else. And you know what? Ain't nothing wrong with that. That's
absolutely
what I'm saying.
Well, one of the big rings that this book led to, which is when you kind of brought me on board with stuff, was your radio show.
I love that.
Kuchina Chatter.
Oh.
Such a fun time. And the concept behind that was a virtual neighborhood.
Yeah, kitchen table
kitchen
conversation.
Table conversations. Yeah. You brought in a cast of characters.
I did.
I was one of them.
You were.
You know, was this all part of the dream when you were doing Gravy Wars?
No,
or was this
came. This.
So let's talk a little bit about
okay,
it.
Okay, so in 2006, and I was going through some life changes. In 2006, when I started really writing Gravy Wars,
right.
I had been toying with the idea of leaving my full-time radio job.
Mm-hmm.
It was a real struggle. It had been about a five-year decision, I kid you not.
Wow.
From my mid to late 30s, I was torn. What do I do? I just wasn't cutting it. It was tough. I was barely making ends meet. I was taking on side work. I was getting up at 3 a.m. I had four young children, and, you know, working 5 to 10 is great hours, but when you're not making enough money and the babysitter gets half your take-home pay,
it's not practical.
Something's wrong, right? Yeah. So that's when I started doing a lot of writing on the side, a lot of, you know, I started building up my public relations, marketing, consulting business and whatnot, and I started doing training and whatnot. And I sat one day and I looked and I was so sleep deprived. It was horrible. It was just a bad time in my life. And I said, all right, something's got to give. And the radio career, I love it, but I keep hitting the glass ceiling. Mm-hmm. Whether it was my own fear holding me back, and I'm sure it was 90% that, whatever it was, I wasn't breaking through. And at that point in my life, I couldn't pick up and move to another city.
Right.
Because I had four little ones. So what do? I said, well, I'm going to have to give this solo entrepreneur stuff a shot. And it was May 5th, Cinco de Mayo, 2006, when I walked away from the broadcast booth.
Okay.
It was the hardest thing to do. I said, I miss it so much. I loved it. I loved my family there. I loved being on the air. I loved that whole, you know, theater of the mind. I loved it. And
you were on some of the big players in the
I was up and down the dial in Philadelphia. There wasn't a station I wasn't on in some capacity, doing traffic, doing weather, doing news, DJing, and it was such a part of my life for over 20 years, and I walked away because I had to. It was practicality.
Sometimes you need to step off the merry-go-round, reevaluate.
Right. And so, those following years were tough as a contractor. If you've ever done solely contract work, you get a gig, it's great. The gig ends, and it's like, okay, now I don't have any income. So I did that for several years.
A lot of hustling involved.
And at the same time, I was hustling with the book. Mm-hmm. So there was a little bit of hope that maybe this book will do something. And it did. It led to speaking engagements that I might not have otherwise done. And so I honed my own public speaking skills. You know, there were lots of flops. If anybody's listening, yeah, I know. If you saw me, I know there are a lot of flops, but, you know, it's gotten better. Right. And I got to put that out of the disclaimer.
Even Sinatra's hit a few sour notes in live concerts, so don't knock yourself
about that. You know? But then when I got on social media, I'm taking the long way to your question.
No, that's fine.
When I got on social media in 2008, and I started to figure out how to use Facebook, and I realized, okay, this is public relations on steroids. And I saw how many people used it just as their personal, I don't know, cathartic vent, you know, like, I really don't care that you just brushed your teeth. Are you kidding me? You're putting that down there? So I was, you know, very political, so I would throw out some political comments. Mm-hmm. I'd get all kinds of response. I'm like, oh, look how twerked up everybody gets over that. Then I put out a food comment. That got even more passion and more response. And I mean, the arguments over gravy and sauce on Facebook from 2008 till even till today, unbelievable. So I said, all right, after a couple of years, I said, enough with the politics, because you're never going to change anybody's mind in 40 characters or 140 characters. I'm going to stick with the food stuff. And my other passion is, you know, like I said, entrepreneurship. I'm a huge Dale Carnegie fan. So I love all that business self-help, you know, positive thinking and how to do things. And, you know, so I try to put some of those tips out there, and then practical tips and whatnot. And I'm still doing that stuff. And it's neat. But the responses when you put a food thing. Oh, my gosh.
Yeah.
I'll get into that story a little bit. Let me go back. But what I realized with all that is this is like a virtual radio show. And this was 2010.
Okay.
And I said, darn it, I missed radio so much. I said, I'm getting back. Now, the landscape in radio has changed. You want a radio show? You can have one. You just got to pony up the money.
Right. Yeah, the whole thing now, because it's not just what they call terrestrial radio now. It's a whole new world.
So, and the terrestrial stations, to survive, they'll give anybody a show if you'll pay them for the hour. They don't want to invest.
Self-supported.
Absolutely.
Yeah, gotcha.
So that's why on the weekends on these talk stations, you hear a lot of infomercials.
Okay.
And it's money people. It's doctors with, you know, cure-all pills, and that's about it.
Right.
And I couldn't, with all my, you know, friends and connections in Philly radio, I pitched this up and down. Mm-hmm. And 1210 that I spent a lot of years on, the price was astronomical. And I went back to my book sponsors. I said, you guys want to pony up, oh, I don't know, 60, 70 grand a year so I can do the show? And they're like, no.
Okay.
And who's going to? And that would just be the cover of the cost. That wouldn't be even put a dime just in my pocket, you know?
Right.
And I thought, you know, when I got into radio, I knew the money was in sales, not in on-air talent. But it wasn't my thing. I didn't have the passion to sell radio. I just had the passion to produce, to do the on-air bit. So I found a small station that didn't cost me too much money, and I ponied up myself. And now this is while I'm still contracting. I don't have a regular paycheck, and I did it for about 2 years.
Yeah.
And then I said, enough. I just can't afford this anymore because I don't like selling. I don't like asking people for money.
Right. You're more about the
yeah. And then so much time was going into the production.
A lot of hats you were wearing. It's amazing.
You wear them all, right? Yeah. And it's a shame. I you know, probably not the wisest businesswoman in the world. I probably could have gotten somebody to underwrite and hire a salesperson and do it right. But I was so busy with life, taking care of kids, taking care of the house, trying to get some income, you know, writing on the side, doing, you know, workshops and all this other stuff that I do, that I just never could devote the right amount of time. But I didn't want to give it up totally, so I still have my Cucina Chatter blog.
Cucina Chatter blog is still there.
C-U-C-I-N-A chatter.com. Mm-hmm. Carl designed the website. Thank you for that.
I did have a hand in that. Yeah.
And he didn't make any money off me either, and I feel bad. So I really appreciate it.
Not why I do it.
I know. See? And it's a labor of love. But so I still keep Cucina Chatter alive.
Okay.
I would love to bring back the radio show because I did it my way and I loved it.
And
we were sitting around the table. We had prayer.
The virtual table, you started off with a prayer. I was in a segment called The Upstairs Kitchen, which I love. I shared The Upstairs Kitchen.
You did.
I shared The Upstairs
Kitchen.
You were
very kind to do that.
You know, well, that's the way I am. That's how I roll. But we had we could talk all about the different segments, which, you know, which were all fantastic. It was a virtual kitchen. A hangout, which I loved, you know.
Yeah.
You offered me a position in the upstairs kitchen. For those that don't know, a lot of Italian Americans have two kitchens in their house. The upstairs one is the showcase one, the one that my family would joke around with. You would have the red velvet rope where you can look at the beautiful, you know, marble and everything. But you did all the dirty work got done downstairs. Mm-hmm. That's where, you know, all the blood, sweat, and tears happen. But you allowed me to cook in your upstairs kitchen.
Oh, absolutely.
And I started off with that. And I made connections with you, like we said earlier on, with Tiffany Longo, mm-hmm. Una Mama Italiano, who I did reach out to her. She will be joining us at some point on the show to see what she's up to. She's the person that kind of influenced me to start off with the food blog just to begin with. But when you brought her on and we split time, we would do every other week.
Mm-hmm.
She would call in 1 week. I would call in the other. And oh my goodness, there were some times when you would get us going on these food challenges, East Coast versus West Coast.
Right.
And Tiffany and I would talk like the night before and we would lay out a plan. And again, this goes to show you how, and I'm learning with this, you can only structure so much. It's better to do off the cuff.
Absolutely.
Because we would come up with a plan and I would write notes and thinking, okay, here's where she'll say this and I'll say that. And it'll be fun and it'll be like a really cool
thing.
And
then I throw you a curveball.
And not only you, but we would come on and she would turn into like, you know, professional wrestler slamming me. And I'm gonna come after you. And I'm on the other end of my, you know, the line going like, oh my God, what did I just get myself into? And then I realize, I'm talking to these two Italian women here who know how to cook.
What were you thinking?
I got no choice. I just got to roll with it. But we had a lot of fun with that.
It was.
It was a great time. You opened up so many doors for me with that, meeting people.
That's so sweet.
You got a bunch of us included in your when you hosted the Italian festival at Rose Tree Park.
Yes, yeah.
You made celebrities. You were there. You were part of the audience.
Did I meet you there?
No.
I didn't think so.
Not at the time. We were there. I actually have a picture of me and my son.
Right.
Sitting on the lawn out there.
Yeah. Beautiful day. Carl, Chrissy, Lucas, they're always, you know, best friends. So they're always there.
Oh, that's great.
You know, and you made big celebrities out of my daughters that day who ran up on stage, which was
your daughters are
yes,
celebrities.
They are.
They've been on the show.
Yeah,
was Ava on the show or was she too young?
She may have said hello once. Juliana was on a number of times.
She just carried herself like a pro.
She's amazing. And I'm just going to sit back and watch them.
I have a story to share, a memory from that day. I'll cut this out. But I remember Ava could not keep her shirt on.
Oh, yeah.
She kept doing this. She's on stage dancing or something. Her shirt was coming up.
She was about two at the time, folks, and you don't have to cut that out. That's funny.
She made no money that day, so you don't have to cut that.
Look at what you have to watch out for.
Oh, please. My hands are full. But, I mean, it was just a fantastic time, and you taught me a lot about,
great.
I mean, just absorbing. And this is why I would hang around and see what was going on, because I saw this big picture, and I knew it was going to go somewhere, and I'm always the type to absorb and to see what where it goes.
Can I let you in on a secret?
Sure.
I'm still learning,
You're
too.
You're still learning?
Oh, absolutely.
You always learn. You never
oh, my gosh.
Done.
Yeah. But, and I think know. About that day, and I think, gosh, I should have done so many things differently with that whole gig.
You know what? It was a fun opportunity. I couldn't think of anything different. I'm sure you may have other ideas in mind. I met your mom that day.
Oh,
she was
my.
Working the stands.
Yeah.
You know? And, you know, just as little, you told me you put together some promotional pieces, something to get, you know, your website out. And I made these little postcards with recipes. And
that's right.
Having people come up to me and taking them and asking me questions.
Yeah.
It was like, I mean, I was just a kid, grew up in South Philly and started this food blog to just keep track of my recipes. And few years down the line, I'm on stage in a park.
You're handing out your recipes.
I mean,
beautiful recipe cards that you made because
you
are
a
designer.
Yeah.
And they're awesome recipes. Your food
fun.
Blog
yeah.
is amazing.
Thank you. Yeah.
It really is cool. I look and I'm like, who would have thought to do that with eggplant? You know, like, just amazing.
You know, I'm that's what the food blog is about, is evolving.
Mm-hmm.
I'm always evolving. That's why we're here today. And, you know, try and keep the recipes moving. But, you know, it was just an awesome opportunity. And I hope in some capacity, if it ever comes back,
it will.
On there.
You
know?
We'll do something. Oh, absolutely. Now that, you know, when you get bit by the radio bug,
sure.
I guess maybe the TV bug, it never goes away.
No.
And it's so funny because
it's on the back burner, simmering.
Always,
yes.
always. You know, if anybody at work's listening, don't worry, I'm not running out yet. I need that weekly paycheck, but
sure.
I want to get back in the worst way, in some capacity.
When creativity is in your blood, it's hard to keep it. It's hard to, you know, keep it down for so long. Maloix, Beware the Evil Eye. What was that about?
Oh, it's funny you should mention that because I'm working on a third. That is one in a series of vignettes.
Okay.
When I was coming up with ways to promote the book in 2009, mm-hmm. I'm friendly with a local community theater,
mm-hmm.
Colonial Playhouse.
Sure.
And so it's a volunteer community theater. And then I know one of the directors. I said, you know, they have this summer shorties that they do, quickies. They do the summer quickies there. They throw maybe 6 or 8 short one-act plays together in their summer program. So I said, can I get one of my stories, one of my vignettes up there? And he said, oh, you have? I said, oh, yeah, I have a whole series of them. Well, you know me. I speak before I jump in, before I learn how to swim. They were here. They were in my head. So I wrote one real quick, and it was Ajita.
Okay.
And it was just, you know, I put these characters together based on my family.
Okay.
And he cast this so well. These they were hysterical. So I did it as a promotion to promote the book.
Right.
So I got up. That was in the summer of 2009, and I talked a little bit about the book, and I encouraged people to buy. Well, people go to community theater, you know, when they're spending $8 a ticket, they're not spending any more money. So
right.
It turned out to be an okay promotion. I got some press out of it and whatnot, but book sales didn't go through the roof. But Ajita was fun.
Okay.
And I said to him, can I do another one next year? He said, well, we don't want to do too many years in a row or whatever. And I put it aside. I had the other one written in my head, and that was the Maloix. And last year I said, oh my gosh, I can't believe it's been so many years already. I called my buddy Ron up. I said, it's due for another little Gravy Wars vignette. He said, yeah, give it to me. So I banged out the script for Maloix, Beware the Evil Eye. Another awesome job the cast did. First night when they'd opened, the lights went out. There was a thunderstorm because this was early July. And or late June, and the lights went out, and they only had the emergency lights over the exits. Now, this is a square little building.
Sure.
So it was just enough because they dim the lights anyhow. You
right.
didn't have the stage lighting, but it was enough. So the character Vinny comes on stage, and he's this 40-something-year-old married guy. He's the son. It's the two parents, Vinny, the daughter, Gina, and then the other daughter, Natalie, who you don't ever see, but they just talk about her because she's a little snooty. And Vinny comes, hey, yo, Pop, what's up? He's using choice words because they ad-lib, which was great.
Oh,
and the
awesome.
Language
okay.
is off the wall. You wouldn't want to bring your daughters, but it was funny. He says, you cheap bastard, you couldn't even pay the bill this month? Yeah, oh, shut up, Vinny. They totally ad-libbed the opening to work with the lighting, and people were rolling. It
That's
was great.
That's fantastic.
So as we speak, I am overdue on submitting crepe hangers for this year's Colonial Quickies. Yes. You know, you've had crepe hangers in your, when you want to explain to Carl what a crepe hanger is.
go ahead. You can. I don't.
All right. So the crepe hanger are these women that just go to funerals like a sport because they just love to be sad, and they wear black all the time. Yeah. And they're the little old Italian women.
They're professional mourners.
Exactly. Professional mourners is what they are. But back in the day, you know, I don't. My mother told me these stories. I can't say that I actually saw it, although I saw my great aunts. They always look glum. When you look at the pictures, if you have any family that has pictures.
No smiles.
If they have any pictures, photography from the 30s, 40s, not so much 50s, but, you know,
20s, house 30s, 40s, dresses, serious,
black long dresses. Mm. They're not smiling. The women look like they'll kill you with their bare hands.
Sure.
And they're glum. And those were crepe hangers. My mother said that her aunts used to go, you know, because there were churches in Philadelphia, in any big city, I'm sure, on like every block. Yeah. So every day there was a funeral.
Right.
They would attend just because they, you know, they wanted to be sad. They wanted to be martyrs. They wouldn't even know who it was that was being mourned, and they would attend.
You know what? It makes me wonder if they would do just the opposite with weddings. And the reason why I say that is because with our wedding videotape. There's a person there. To this day, nobody knows who she is. She was sitting in the back row. Mm-hmm. We're walking out of the church. Everyone's applauding, and the camera backs out, and you see it's the last pew in the church, and there's a woman there in a black dress, older woman, black, just smiling,
waving. There was an event. She probably went to every mass she could.
And my wife watched the video with my family and was like, oh, that's great. Who is that? Oh, I don't know. I thought it was somebody in your family. And we watch it with her family, friends. Nobody knows. May have just been somebody from the neighborhood.
Somebody from the neighborhood.
Need a little pick-me-up.
Yeah.
Well,
it could be.
You know, so who knows.
But the other thing they used to do in the old days, you know, they would leave the body for 3 days in the house. And people would, the wake would be in the house for 3 days. You know.
It was a long process.
Could you imagine a childhood like that? You'd go up to bed and your dead aunt, uncle, ma, whoever was, grandparent was in the living room in the coffin.
Yeah, no wonder why there wasn't a lot of smiles.
Well, and when they did that, they would hang black crepe paper over the windows.
Over the windows, right, okay.
That's the crepe hangers.
Sure.
So that everybody knew you were in mourning.
Yes.
Because it wasn't enough to mourn. You had to let everybody know, right? It's like everything else we do. Everybody's got to know. It's like Facebook. Everyone's got to know when you brush your teeth. Craziness.
So this is going to be the next
crepe hangers production. Is the next vignette.
Wow.
As soon as I leave here today, I got to get it on paper.
Get it on paper.
I'm still having trouble with where does it take place, in the back of the church or in the Scotagamazza's living room like the other one. So I'll let you know.
Keep us posted on that. Definitely. if you ever decide to do a theater production based off of Cucina Chatter, just throwing a suggestion out, Stanley Tucci, if you're available, you can play me in the upstairs kitchen. I get enough people telling me.
No, you would play you.
I would play
Dominic,
me.
Dominic,
okay.
That's a great idea.
There you go.
Maybe we do that this year.
I'm on board.
Do a live radio show, but it won't be on broadcast. Well, it could be broadcast, Carl.
You could do it right here. I got my mics.
Well, no, on the theater, though.
The theater.
You know?
Oh, yeah.
We could figure something out with that.
Oh, yeah. That's in the works.
I brought up Stanley Tucci because not a week goes by where somebody says, do you know who you look like or somebody reminds you of? And he's in all the cooking movies, so I take it as a compliment.
Okay.
You know? But if ever you need somebody, I'm not available, and you can pull the strings, by all means.
Oh, okay.
Have
sure. Yeah.
We'll work on that.
I think I could afford you more, though. Just saying.
Yeah, it's worth a shot. Okay, so we talked about the book. We talked about Cucina Chatter. Talked about your theater productions. Mm-hmm. You're covering everything. What is on the horizon? Because I know in the back of your Gravy Wars book, you mentioned some possible sequels, and I know things change. And I've submitted a couple of recipes for those sequels, and I'm sure you do. But
you and about 100 other people. I did want to do another Gravy Wars where the recipes were all the readers sent them in. And I would like to do that.
Right.
And I thought I would have done it by now. Mm-hmm. It's a money issue. I have to find the support for that. I'm not ready to invest in that myself. Mm-hmm. I might do an online piece, but I have a couple of other online books that I want to put out.
Okay.
Nothing to do with cooking or anything, so I may even use a pen name. Stay tuned for that.
Nom de plume.
the other thing was, you know, these vignettes. Mm-hmm. My hope was that they would double as TV pilot. Mm. I don't know how to get into that world, so maybe Carl can help me there. We'll see. If they're that good, you know, you have to have the right actors, and the crew at Colonial, they're just hysterical. I wrote it. I gave it to them. I didn't go to one rehearsal.
So when you saw it was the first time you saw what was happening.
I
must have knocked you.
I was dying laughing.
That's great.
My mom didn't appreciate it too much. Because that's supposed to be me.
Right.
Yeah. The hypochondriac. That was you, Ma. So that's all I have planned right now. Okay. You know, I also have to put a little plug out there. Anybody can contact me, LorraineRinaldi.com, or through Dominic, because I have to get these books out of the garage. So I am doing bulk sales. You want to give them away to your, you know, contacts, your, you know, business people, your companies, whatever. Buy them by the carton. We'll make a deal. That's how we roll.
Sounds we'll good. Have links to all this.
Absolutely.
In the show notes.
Yeah.
So people can get right to your stuff.
I'm excited for you, and I'm excited to know where you plan to take this.
Well, thank you very much. At this point, we're just rolling with it. It's a very grassroots, organic product we're putting out here.
Yeah.
We have so many things in mind. We've reached out to people that are interested in talking to us, as you did today.
Oh, okay.
And I think we're going to have a lot of fun with this. You know, it's kind of hard now because with the winter season, you can only do so much.
Sure.
Carl and I are both people that like to be outside, cook outside. So as the weather warms up, we're really going to reach out and do a lot of fun things on that angle.
Right.
I would love to do some video stuff on location.
That would be fun.
You know, I could be out by the grill, and I could be filming it, and we could be talking, and
there's
whatever.
No reason you can't do both, you know?
Oh, yeah.
Video's great. That's where it's at. Everybody's putting videos up all the time. But I'll tell you, the beauty of radio, my passion, is you get to describe it. And it's like reading a book, and the listener gets to decide what Carl looks like, what you look like, what that food looks like. And that's okay, because they're going to make it how they want it.
Right.
You know?
Theater of the mind is just a perfect description of that.
Yeah.
Real quick, back in your radio days, give me a funny encounter story with someone you may have ran into, whether you were at a club or doing promotional, anything.
Because
you mentioned how, like, and I've been in that position where I listen to a DJ and I see a picture of him and it kind of alters it a little bit.
Sure. Well, I've had people come up to me and say, oh, I didn't think you'd be so young, because I remember hearing you when I was a little kid. And I say, I was a little kid too.
Right.
I had a classmate come up to me early on in my career and say, oh my God, Lorraine, I saw her in Houlihan's of all places, right?
Wow. Yeah.
And I hadn't seen her in years. And she said, it was probably like 5 years out of high school. She said, there's a girl on the radio with your same name. I said, get out. You know, stuff
what are
like
the odds
that.
Of that happening?
Yeah, right?
Funny.
Yeah, it's things like
because
that.
Because you were homegrown. I mean, you were part of it all. And is that common? Because
no, but you know, in Philadelphia, it's the biggest small town in the country.
Sure.
You know, and everybody I talk to, especially in radio, because a lot of people come from other cities, you really want to be making and broadcasting. You got to be willing to travel when you're young. And I didn't want to do it. I traveled to Atlantic City. I had a job on the boardwalk, WAYV. 2 months later, I'm like, I miss home. I was an hour from home, for real. that's what you have. But people that come in from out of town, they always say, gosh, people don't leave this area.
Yeah.
You mean your mother and your brother and your sister, they all live around the corner? Well, within 10 minutes, yeah.
Right. And that's far
that's
for
a
some
far.
People. That is.
Yeah,
I mean,
exactly.
Not for big, you know.
So it's happened here. You know, there's a lot of homegrown successes.
There is.
You know.
It's a fantastic market for everything. Everything you've done. Food-related stuff.
Oh, I mean, there's so much in this area.
And I'm learning every day. The connection's opening up, and it's amazing. And if you take advantage of it, again, the rewards are amazing. It's fantastic.
And it's a great area to be for any kind of business. You know, when you go to the West Coast, when you say you're from Philadelphia, people say, oh, okay, so like New York area. And I think, I don't think of myself as a New Yorker whatsoever.
Right.
But on the West Coast, you're so close. Philadelphia is just that little sandwich city
Washington and New York. We're like the stepkids to that,
seems
like sometimes.
And you know what? You think what you want. This is our best kept secret. We got the best hospitals. We got the best food. We're driving distance to both other big cities.
Ivy League schools.
So many colleges. I mean, think about it, right?
It's amazing. From the beer aspect, Carl and I both we enjoy it. Now, I'm saying this in seriousness.
Dozens of breweries.
You know, we get in Philadelphia more imports, microbrews, I think just about anybody else in the country.
And you got the beer guys. Wasn't it Joe Sixpack from around here?
Joe Sixpack writes for the Daily News.
Yeah, you'll get him on your show.
Absolutely. He would be a great person to have on.
I'll write that down.
Well, yes, take notes.
Mental note.
So with that said, again, Lorraine, I can't tell you how much of a pleasure it was to have you on here.
The pleasure is all mine.
First
really.
Guest. I'm learning how to do this interview thing. Hopefully it worked out well. We've been doing this for about an hour. We didn't knock over one microphone stand. Lots of hands and arms moving in true Italian
fashion. No spilled drinks.
No spilled drinks. We did okay.
Yeah.
But again, honestly, thank you. You're welcome back here anytime. You want to promote anything, jump in. We'll see if we can get a Cucina Chatter reunion happening.
We'll
at
do
some
it.
Point,
we will
you know?
Do it. Thank Let's you so that. Much. And Carl, thank you. This is wonderful.
Yes. Again, where can people find you? How can they get in touch with you?
Well, always LorraineRinaldi.com. I know it's a mouthful. I probably should have been a little smarter about that because you can't spell my name. But
the links will be on the show notes.
Yeah, so Facebook, LinkedIn. Mm-hmm. Huge on LinkedIn. I love it.
Great. Fantastic. Well, thanks again. And any comments, questions you have, you want
to reach
out to
yourself.
Us? If they're the nice ones, you can reach us at info@domskitchen.com. For Lorraine Rinaldi and for Carl, I am Dom. Thank you for joining us. This has been a little of this and some of that.